ever good at that.
Ooh, recording,
I've got a
leave progress.
Reading option. I might choose that. Nah, just kidding.
No. Hello, friends.
Hi, everyone. I'm gonna say, Matt, you're outside. Do you have a Yeti on your deck?
I'm gonna assume that deck because you're Australian. I also have all. This is why I don't like the outdoors. I am using a hotspot at a cabin in Wisconsin because the Wi-Fi went out up here. Excuse me, wasp. Sorry, I'm a little distracted. This fucker's coming for my face. Okay.
Is that a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant that you've got buzzing around you?
No. None of that. Right. I'm sure there is some around. Well, I'm actually staring at a two-story cross across the water over here at a Lutheran day camp or Bible camp, I think is what the sign said. So we're just going to keep, you know, my background to myself this weekend.
There you go.
If you don't mind us asking, which lake in Wisconsin are you on?
I couldn't tell you. Just one of them.
You picked one and so just many. Started driving.
Right.
You started driving and went to the first abandoned house that you thought you saw. Is that how this works?
You know, no scary movies start that way. So it makes sense. Oh my God, this wasp was trying to go up my pants. What the hell is wrong with this world?
Do you need to like move? You should move somewhere else?
No, I'm going to just play it safe.
You have no idea like how much I'm cringing in terror because me and bees and wasps, we don't get along at all. So
yeah,
I'm cringing in on behalf of you as I'm hiding out in my office.
You're safe, Laura, and I'm safe in this hoodie. We'll just go into Darth mode here and tent up. Yeah, but yeah,
Matt, I think that's less Darth and more Unabomber. Just by the way.
Did you go to Australia recently? Your accent is real, like, next level.
No, it's but back. I am going there in a couple of weeks. So
maybe
I'm practicing.
There you go. Going to Melbourne or up to Cairns?
All of the above.
No. None of it. Wait, where are you headed?
Mostly going to spend the time in Brisbane where my folks are, since I haven't seen anyone for 3 years because, you know, obvious reasons.
Yeah, good old Brizzy.
All right. Yeah.
All right.
And then I also, I'll be super immune for my trip there because I finally succumbed to my first bout of COVID a few weeks back.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. Are you reasonably recovered from said vid?
Yeah, I just dosed up real heavily on ivermectin and I've been fine.
Yeah. Okay, good to know.
You know,
did you drink some bleach?
I drank the bleach. I injected high C straight into my veins for the vitamin C.
That's, gotcha. That's good.
Yeah,
probably got the heartworms out too, which is important for you.
Exactly. Yeah, I do. I did have a lot of horseworms in me, so it helps both ways.
That's awesome, man. And Laura, other than awesome. Breaking down, talking to us again, what's going on in your world?
Actually, as soon as we are off this call, I am getting in a car and we are going to go disappear into the lake country in Arkansas for the weekend. I am looking forward to
Arkansas.
Less than no internet and no one being able to find me for like 3 days. I'll take it.
You doing hot springs or somewhere else?
Nearby there. Yeah. So, Landon's dad is, finally retired and he's all excited about being retired. And you know how people who are retired the first time they're like, they don't know what to do with themselves.
Yeah. So they're like, let me distract myself with as many humans as possible.
Right. Yes. Yeah, so that's basically what we're going to go do. Apparently we're going to go smoke ribs and, I'm just enjoying rain because it's starting to rain here in Austin, which was exciting yesterday after how many days without rain? I think like 70 some days without rain or any kind of moisture. But then I go up to Arkansas, we're going to be on a lake. There's water and it'll be raining and I plan to sit there and just enjoy it and smoking ribs and eating this all.
Yeah, there's a lot of good things coming together right there.
So, yeah, yeah, and no one can find me.
That seems to be an important note to you.
The best part. That's the best part. No one can find me. Escape.
Yeah, so, that's great.
You are also on a lake. Clearly,
I'm very much like right on the lake. Yeah, for those on the non-visual medium, I just turned my screen around to show. It's really beautiful out right now. It's been raining on and off, but looks like the sun's coming out for a little bit, and might get into the water this afternoon.
Nice.
There you go.
Yeah,
and the wasps won't follow you into the water.
What's that?
The wasps won't follow you into the water.
No, that's but good. Hopefully the dog will. She's very tentative around the water, but she loves chasing after me once I'm in there. But then she gets, you know, she does that in out thing where she's like, I don't know if I like this. Maybe I like this. I don't know if I like this. It's pretty cute.
So you're in Wisconsin. Did you stop at Culver's when you arrived? And did you buy a bunch of cheese?
You know what? I think I had enough cheese for a lifetime when you dropped off some at my place. Paul got me a series of cheeses of increasingly aged cheddar from Wisconsin, and
nice. It
was phenomenal. Yeah, the 1 year, 5 year, 10 year, and 15, I think. And I ended up finding like the 5 year was that sweet spot for me. But we melted a bunch down into like a, you know, a three cheese mac and cheese.
And nice.
So nothing like taking fancy cheese and making it like, you know, trashy. it was pretty lovely.
Still sounds delicious though.
But yeah, we haven't been anywhere. We just drove straight here. It's their first outing with the kiddo. Like, and she's doing great. She slept really well last night, and just excited to get her into some lake water because she's never been.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you're clearly getting more sleep then. If she slept well, that means you slept well, hopefully.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's
even good. Though it was some random, you know, mattress that you get when you're at a cabin.
Yeah.
That energy, yeah. I still, you know, I'm enough of a sleep deficit where I just like crashed right out.
Pass
at
out.
Like 10 o'clock. It was amazing.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, heck, we haven't caught up on who's doing what where in a minute. So where do you want to start?
Food. I want to start
food.
Or right. Paul, you can go first. So.
Paul is food. Food is Paul.
I was gonna check. Are we all still like gainfully employed and you know?
So I think
are we working at the same place we used to work? Like I can't remember when we caught up last time.
When did we last?
And what changes we've had?
Yeah, it's been a minute, so maybe to acknowledge that for folks, it has been very difficult to get our schedules to align. I think things, you know, JJ was anchoring us for a while, but he has been on many a plane in the last few months, like taking enough plane rides for all four of us. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Paul and I have had, actually all three of us have had reasonably new gigs due to either promotion or just changing roles.
Wait. Really? I have?
We haven't? I mean,
no,
your Pulumi things. So, you're at an early startup. It's changes every week.
No, anyway. I haven't really changed much. So still doing
Fair
my
enough.
DA thing. But yeah.
Good, good, good. Well, regardless, it's been challenging to find times at work. And hopefully this is still fun to get in your feed now and again. And no one's waiting for it too hard. I doubt that last part. But yeah, things are going well for me. I've been trying to get my arms around the product portfolio I work on in this target production engineering team. And it's fascinating, like the collection of software that teams are building and trying to find the right abstraction points and trying to find what we're allowed to do build versus buy based on what the problems are. So I feel like I'm, you know, slowly but surely getting deeper into that and trying to think from, through some patterns of like what matters to our users as opposed to just like building things that we've been building for a couple years. So it's been really satisfying.
Cool. Do you all have like a distinct preference when it comes to build versus buy, just sort of institutionally?
I think Target went through a pretty public shift in 2013, where it went from everything in IT was considered, you know, not part of the company, so it was outsourced, and then that shifted to everything was in. So it was the beginning of Target Tech and a huge investment in that organization, the organization I'm a part of. So they swung the pendulum all the way to the other side, where like we built everything. And there's still a good bit of, you know, build it yourself, make sure we know what we're using, make sure we know where the data is going, and, you know, build it for our use case rather than adopt something that's general. But as you all know, like there's so many layers of abstraction and software where, like, you know, at some point you get to some layer where you're not going to build it. Like, we're not going to build our own, you know, time series database from scratch, or no one should try to recreate Postgres at this point, for like a more classic database. And so I think I'm finding the lines where we're like, no, we know we shouldn't build that. But it's definitely still has pockets of build it yourself-isms that I'm challenging, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Like, of is this where we want to add value, or is there a layer above it? And that's been fun because I'm using like worldly maps to try to draw out the value chain of things and user need. And I've always been in circles that use, you know, strategies like that, but I've never actually applied it to a product portfolio. So that's been really fun.
So worldly maps, that's when you decide what you want and then you draw a bunch of pictures to prove that what you want is what's needed, right?
That's how worldly maps mean, work. You could do that under any only term. You,
Paul. Troll.
So the build versus buy. So bringing it back to like everyone's favorite thing to talk about, Kubernetes, right? So it sounds like, you know, before Target Tech, before the, like, it would have been, we'll just use a vendor's Kubernetes. Then after the pendulum swung, it would have been, we're going to lovingly handcraft our own Kubernetes from open source. And then at some point recently, you're now doing the, well, maybe we should just use XKS so that we can focus above that on, you know, the stuff that's actually valuable to our developers.
No, you're thinking a little vendor-y, man. I think before that, it was, it wasn't use somebody else's Kubernetes.
Well, it was like, do it for us.
Yeah, it's like pay somebody else to run your website and don't care what they run it on top of.
Got it.
But then you have the incredible distance between the quality experience you have online and the quality experience we have in stores. So there's been a big push of like that same in-person experience. Can we bring that to the online experience? And you can't do that through people who don't know that experience firsthand,
right?
Or it's too many layers of abstraction there. So the infrastructure layer is definitely a lot of, there's mainframe because we've been around for more than 5 years, and there's Kubernetes because we've been around for the last 5 years, and everybody's tried a Kubernetes at least once. But there's also other, you know, container runtime services. There's a large public GCP instance that we've been known to use. So a lot of options, which can be partly the challenge of measurement and reliability. You're like, well, how reliable are you? Well, where are you running? Are you built for that? Like, do you know the failover patterns in that environment versus a different one?
Cool.
No,
so I feel
it's
like
really fun to do that.
There's a kind of classic pattern of when you swing the pendulum to build it yourself, you kind of give everyone the freedom to do whatever they want. And then you kind of swing back to the middle somewhere where you're like, we want to give people freedom, but also, you know, we don't want to have 16 different ways to do this one thing. Is that sort of what you're dealing with right now, is trying to, you know, take everything that everyone's running and make it sort of a more sensible and more, not necessarily centralized, but, you know, more standardized, I think maybe is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think there's an element of that for sure. Because if you think of a charter of production engineering, it's like the reliability and performance, finding that right balance of cost versus, you know, max throughput of an application. And part of that is like, how do we build that into where people are using it so that you don't have to think about it? Like, what are our options for auto scaling? What are our options for, you know, observability stacks that just kind of spin up as you push to prod? And the more variability you have, the more customization you need to make, and the more frail the software will be of like, well, it works in this one under that situation, but not in this one. So I think some of the options will naturally reduce as the value increases in one of them. So less fiat, more happy path is how I like to think about it. Like, can I build a happy path for devs?
Explains why there's a lot for you to get your arms around with all of the different projects and
programs. Laura, there's so much to do. It's so it's so fascinating, and also like, yeah, holy hell. Like, we just did a walkthrough of each application stack, and I'm just like, there's just layers and layers and layers of software that's very incredibly well built in parts. And you're just like, how does that part talk to these other parts that weren't expecting something like this over there and that over there? So, you know, the local versus global optimization of a solution. It's wild.
So when we're talking about the app stacks, is there a pretty good like cohesion around like a particular language framework and stuff? Like, are folks sort of naturally using, say, Java with, say, Spring, and then the Netflix stack to do all your sort of magic microservices bits? Or
Not exactly that, but yes, there's definitely pretty reasonable standards that you don't have to, you know, ask people to adopt. It's just part of the culture.
Nice. Has that been kind of just culturally it's worked out that way, or has someone sort of been putting in the effort to like put the standards in place, make sure there's a happy path, and kind of show the, you know, the benefits of it versus, you know, forcing it?
That's a great question. I'm not totally sure. You know, like, I'm still getting my mind around, like, you know, some people might think milk magically appears in front of your house versus like, you know, somebody's paying the milkman and the milkman comes every week. Those are different things. And now it's raining outside in the sun shower. So,
Yeah, no, Yeti's a waterproof, right?
Yeah, but I don't know if my laptop is.
That sounds like IT's problem next week.
It's my laptop.
Well, right. You're IT for yourself. I mean, if the milk magically appears at the door, right? That might count.
All right. You're really abusing my analogy. Yes, I'm getting rained on.
I'm trying.
Okay. Well, the laptop's tucked away, so you'll have to just hear my dulcet tones and not see me.
Oh, boy. It's like we're listening to a podcast.
Oh, that's so just crazy enough to be true. So, yeah, I'll keep sharing stuff as I have other things to share. But what's going on in your worlds?
Well, Paul, you want to go first? You want me to go first?
No, you can go.
I've actually been traveling some. I've been doing a couple of developer conferences, you know, various other things. So I was at DevOps Days Seattle, and I was at KCDC, Kansas City Developer Conference. KCDC was a lot bigger than I expected. For some reason, I thought it was going to be like a regional DevOps Days, right? Like max 400 people. There were 1,800 people this year, roughly.
Damn.
Which is it's a lot of people. And then they have this thing called PubConf, which was glorious fun. I don't know how I ended up on the selection list, but apparently you get invited to do it, and it's Ignite Karaoke. Now, I think both of you have seen Ignite Karaoke, but for people who haven't seen Ignite Karaoke, the basic idea is an Ignite at DevOps Days is you get 20 slides, 5 minutes, auto advancing slides. So the slides advance on a regular cadence. I think it's every 15 seconds. I always forget. But you have to give a talk to these auto advancing slides. Well, when you do Ignite Karaoke, you don't know what the slides are ahead of time. All you know is that, hey, I have to go and give a talk on something and somehow magically make these slides go together.
Oh, that's so funny.
So that's Ignite Karaoke. So PubConf is like the comedy version of this. So there's actually different levels of difficulty. One, the very first one is just basically an Ignite, but you're supposed to be funny, not you know, doing a standard Ignite. It's supposed to be kind of a send up of tech conferences in general, or tech in general. So that's that one. And then the next level, which is the one that I ended up doing, was someone else makes the slides for you, but you get to choose your topic that you can talk about, and you get to see them ahead of time. So you get to see the slides and prep something, but you don't know what those slides are going to be. I ended up with goats. The theme was goat apocalypse that my slides were, which was really interesting. And then the third level is classic Ignite Karaoke, where you don't get to see the slides ahead of time. You have no idea what you're about to get into. It was hilarious fun. I do have pictures and video of mine, but this is one of those, what happens at PubConf stays at PubConf. So highly recommend if you happen to be at a conference that has PubConf to go and watch. It was a good time. So very fun. But that's what I've been up to. Mostly that and lots of work. But yeah. Oh, and we blind baked a pie, but I'll tell you that in a bit. So I want to let Paul talk about whatever he's up to.
With a blindfold?
With a blindfold on. Yeah, I got to bake a pie with a blindfold on. That was entertaining.
So I haven't been up to too much other than work as well. I have done a little bit of travel for work. And, you know, I guess Austin is a COVID hotspot because that's where I came back from and discovered I had it. I'm heading up to Seattle next week to do some stuff with AWS, which will be fun. And then I've got vacation coming up. Well, half vacation, half work, because, you know, it's hard to take a month off work. So I'll be sort of working while I'm in Australia. Other than that, it's just kind of been, heads down doing work stuff and, you know, ignoring life as much as possible.
Makes sense. So we can talk about food. I was going to say, did you want to tell the reason you were down here in Austin, like the very quick?
That was exciting. I forgot about that already. And actually my, I should remember it. Cause so this fun thing, when the previous president, who shall not be named, was in place, completely stripped the Department of Immigration of funding. And so their ability to process things like visas and green cards and stuff basically broke. So I was 18 months into my green card renewal and it was still going nowhere. So I did a bunch of stuff. I contacted my local congressman. I did a Freedom of Information lookup on my own alien file. And then I also made an appointment to get a stamp in my passport that basically gives you another 1 year of he's probably allowed to be let into the country. And that appointment was fun because you can't make that appointment until 30 days before your current extension expires. And then when you do request the appointment, they'll tell you, we'll call you sometime between today and 30 days from now, and it'll come from this number, and we'll call you between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. And if you don't answer it, you have to try again and go back to the start of the queue. So you basically have to stare at your phone for 30 days and hope that it rings. So I had that and I was waiting on it to ring. And then I went to renew my driver's license. Because I'm not a citizen in Texas, you have to do that in person. And I was looking up to see what I needed to do because of the upcoming green card expiry, extension expiry. And basically the response was, Well, there's a 50-50 chance that the Texas Department of Public Safety will just turn you away and not want to deal with you. There's a 50-50% chance they'll give you a temporary one-year driver's license. And then the other 50% chance is they'll just kick the can down the road and you have to come back another time. So I was like, okay, that's not great. And my driver's license was due to expire on the 9th of August. And this is in July, trying to figure all this out, right? And so I called the Department of Immigration and said, hey, look, I can't renew my driver's license until I have this extension, if not my full green card. And they were like, okay, we'll move your appointment up for the in-person appointment to get a stamp for your passport. And I'm like, okay. So they actually then called 2 days later to set an appointment up for like the 20th of August. So it didn't super help me with my driver's license renewal. But then early August, my green card actually suddenly showed up. So, and I think that's about when my, like, someone got the thing from the congressman or my freedom of information lookup request or whatever and decided it was easier to, you know, click the button to approve it versus actually deal with the extra bureaucracy. So that came through. And so that came through. I'm like, okay, cool. I can get my driver's license. So I flew down. I'm in kind of Chicago part-time right now. So I flew to Austin to do it and discovered that the Department of Public Safety is appointment only since like COVID and stuff happened. Mm-hmm. And they have it in one spot on like the front of the website. But if you Google for like renew driver's license and click through to the right place, it doesn't say anything there, right? So I did that. I get there and they're like, turn me away, sorry. And I'm like, dude, I'm here for like a day and a half. Like, your next appointment is in September. Like, yeah. What do I do? And he said, well, we have a small number of walk-in appointments every day. And it's first in, first served. So I suggest you come here a few hours before we open. I said, okay, what time do you open? He said, 7:45. And I said, so you mean like 4 or 5 a.m. And he's like, well, a few hours. I'm like, okay. And he said that if you're not here a few hours early, a line will form. And if you're not like within the first 10 to 12 people in the line, you won't get an appointment on the same day because it's like one every half hour kind of thing. So I'm like, okay. So I show up at 4:30 in the morning. I changed my hotel to be like one that was like 5 minutes walk from there. Stayed there the night, get up at like 4, get to the thing at 4:30 and just like sit on the concrete floor of the parking lot. And then slowly a line forms behind me. I was the first person there. Most people in the line knew, I guess, what they were in for. So brought like camp chairs and like coffee and all sorts of stuff. I'm like, damn it, I should have thought more about this. But yeah, I was first in line. So I walk in, get the first appointment, which was at 8 o'clock. And by 8:30, I'm out of there with a temporary license. And then they forwarded my new license to me just the other day. So this is another pro tip, virtual mailbox services. So if you're not like necessarily always in the same spot, use a virtual mailbox service where basically you get like it's like a PO box, but they'll actually send you a scan of the mail when it arrives. And then you can choose to have them shred it, recycle it, scan it, or forward it to you. And so for some stuff, most stuff's junk, right? So you just tell them to shred it. Occasionally you'll get something that may be interesting. So you ask them to open it. And then stuff like this, you ask them to forward it on. And then you have options on like 1 day, 2 day, or just whenever it shows up. So it actually works out really well because most mail, I just need to like, I just shred, occasionally I look at stuff. And then once or twice a month, I'm like, oh, forward that to me because it's a check or it's a card or it's something else. Yeah. The actual forwarding is kind of expensive because usually if you want it, you want it right away. So you end up paying for like 2 day FedEx or whatever. But otherwise, I think the service is like $20 or $30 a month and gets a certain amount of like a certain amount of letters, a certain amount of scans, and a certain amount of shreds, which so far I haven't gone over the limits of any of that stuff. So it works really well. I highly recommend it. And then you can forward your USPS, you can forward mail to it, or you can just set it as the mailing address for a lot of places. One thing I learned about the USPS forwarding is if you do a permanent USPS forward, they actually somehow have a feedback loop to like corporations and stuff to send you stuff. And then they start changing your address and not just your mailing address, but your actual living address. And that then triggers all sorts of stuff with like changes to your credit rating and blah, blah, blah. Huh. So yeah, just a thing to be cautious of. You know, it's a little bit better to set a temporary one than a permanent one, because then that feedback loop doesn't happen.
Yeah. That's interesting. That's interesting. I've done the USPS where they scan and they send you pictures of your mail. I've done that for a long time. So I know
that's like the
mailbox, but
informed delivery. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you didn't actually need the advice to bring donuts to encourage that you get an appointment. You didn't need that advice that we gave you.
I don't think that would have helped. I'm sure they would have appreciated it.
Probably not. It was kind of said tongue in cheek, because Landon just had to do it like maybe 2 weeks before dealing with that no appointment scenario. So,
But that was,
we had fun telling you about, like, you know, park here because you're closest. If you give them the donuts, they'll make sure that you hear your name being called because you're on the waiting list. Right. It was highly entertaining, to say the least. Right. But
well, of course,
bureaucracy at its finest.
Yeah, that's DMV versus DPS, right? So they also have their own different ways they handle the appointments.
Yeah.
That's just why would we be consistent?
Yeah. I don't know. Who knows? But
so well, I heard something about blind baking a pie.
Yes, I'll explain the blind baking a pie. So we got this book called The Adventure Challenge. And it's supposed to be like activities to do together, and like you have to scratch off the activity and you find out what you're supposed to do. Well, this one was a bake a pie, two people baking a pie, but one person has to be blindfolded the whole time and they have to do all the work. The other person can only direct with hands. They can't say anything. So apparently I got voted to be blindfolded to do all the work to make the pie, but I couldn't see anything going on. The worst part was when I was told to go crack, like I was handed the we prepped everything beforehand. So I like knew kind of what I was getting handed. I knew the recipe, but I had to crack all the eggs into the container. And so I'm cracking eggs blind and I just hear a groan and I'm like, oh no. And he's kind of like guiding my hands into the eggs. I'm like, oh, I got a shell in there. So I had to like figure out how to blindly like fish around in the eggs for the shell that I got in. It was like fun and stupid and really ridiculous on so many levels. The pie tastes awesome though in the end. But yeah, I had the one, we did set some ground rules. We said that there won't be any going near the oven if you're the blindfolded person, because that's a recipe for disaster, especially with me around. I will burn either myself or I will drop the pie all over everything or something. Like, so he had to put the pie into the oven and handle the oven part. And we also measured everything ahead of time just because we didn't want to waste ingredients. Right. That's not cool. But we like basically set all the ingredients out and I couldn't see where he put them down. And then he just blindfolded me and sat me down in a chair. And I'm like, okay. And I was supposed to like be stirring everything. And I guess I got a little too vigorous for how much space there was in the bowl and it got all over the table. And, you know, thankfully we weren't doing something that had like major flour and rolling things out as much. So that was good. But, Yeah. So when we talk about blind baking pies, you're supposed to blind bake the crust and all that, where you just bake it without things. And no, this actually was me blindfolded baking a pie.
Right.
And it was kind of hilarious.
Really cute.
Now, it's funny because when you said blind baking pie, I totally thought you meant blind baking the pie crust. So this is a very fun story to hear that's not what I thought. Did you actually make the pie crust or did you start with a pre-made pie crust?
We started with a roll of pie crust versus making it from scratch, mostly because there's some history here with me and baking. I love to make scones, not like the British kind of scones, but like the American kinds of scones. I love making lemon blueberry scones. They're one of my favorites to make. The problem is that I typically end up with flour all over me, all over the kitchen, like everywhere. And we figured that it wasn't safe. Like, it's bad enough when I can see what I'm doing. It'd probably be even worse if I couldn't see what I was doing. So we decided that it probably was okay. That we have some really hilarious pictures of me trying to like spread this pie crust out into like actually putting it down. And I'm trying to like roll it out and I'm trying to get it into the pie tin. Like, I have a glass pie pan. There we go. That's where I'm looking for, a glass pie pan. I'm trying to get like the pie, the crust in there and not have any pockets. And apparently this was really hilarious to watch because I could just hear him laughing and he's trying to take pictures. Cause part of this is you're supposed to take pictures of the whole thing. He's trying to take pictures and still direct me, but he's not allowed to tell me anything, but he's laughing too hard to come over and try to help me get it into all the little crevices of the pie pan. So apparently it was very hilarious to say the least, but
it's really, really cute.
It's funny.
Yeah, it was really funny. Like setting up a video camera and then doing that like so you can just like let it roll and cut the little clips out of those moments. Yeah, that sounds really fun.
Yeah. It was pretty funny, and the fact that there was a pie at the end that actually tasted good, I'll take that. That's good. So, food.
What else is going on food wise?
Yeah. Anybody make anything cool?
You smoked anything recently, Matt?
Nothing to write home about. I've been good on the rib game. I feel like I've kind of dialed in like the way you recommended making ribs, where they don't fall off the bone, but they easily pull off the bone by the bite. Mm-hmm. I've done that quite a few times using St. Louis style ribs only, because I think I'm a convert from the baby back. It's just, yeah, so flavorful.
Tastier. Okay.
Tasty. Yeah, really cool. So I watched a few YouTubes on like the history of that, because I didn't know the difference between the ribs and when they got popular. And I found, of course, an Australian woman that Paula's sent me some of her spices. She was the top rated YouTube video on the explanation. You should Google it if you're into it. And I've been mostly on my fish game, man. Like, I've been making really good fillets of fish and trying to do some glazes on them now. I made like a fun like miso ginger balsamic glaze
that, yum,
like, nice. It just kind of came together from stuff that I had in the house, and I had to avoid onions because somebody at the dinner was allergic to them, which sounds like a certain form of hell. But, you know, to be respectful, I did not have any onions or shallots or any of that good alliums in there. So ginger really covered it. And then the miso gave a bunch of umami without, you know, hitting any allergens. And it was freaking tasty. I haven't messed with anything beyond like basic glazes, but I'm getting that.
Very cool.
Nice.
How about you, Polly? You getting any grilling in your life?
A little bit. So I'm kind of don't have a lot of space right now. So I've got my little indoor like grill I use for yakitori and stuff. But then I also just got one of the smaller Blackstone grills. which are the propane flat top griddles. Been having a lot of fun with that. It's great for like, it's perfect for breakfast, right? Because you do a couple of rashers of bacon, some shredded potatoes, some eggs, throw the muffins on there, and you literally just like cook everything needed for breakfast just on that one flat surface.
Yeah.
I do want to at some point experiment with doing like some fried rice and stuff on it, because flat top griddles are actually pretty good for doing things like fried rice and other stuff you would sort of usually use a wok for. So I'm looking forward to trying that. And of course, it's amazing for doing burgers, especially like a fast food like smash style burger. The Oklahoma burger is like incredible.
I was just going to ask if you've ever made Oklahoma burgers. Those were new to me, and then my to-do list.
Oh yeah.
So wait. Yeah. What's an Oklahoma burger?
So an Oklahoma burger is when you basically cook the burger on a bed of onions. There's two ways you do it. Either you get the onions on the griddle first, you put the burger on top, and then you sort of smash it on top of the onions. The other way is you do the you put the burger down first, and you put a bunch of shredded onions and then smash them on top.
I don't know
if there's a better way. I have been doing the second one just because it's like, I feel like it really pushes the onions into the meat fair bit. But that's kind of it. And it's a smash burger, right? So you end up with a very flat patty with like a bunch of onion, and you want to super finely shred the onion. So like one of those like V slicer things, mandolins are perfect for it. Or if you're decent with a sharp knife, it's pretty easy to do as well. And then I have seen some people use chopped onions, and even folks will recommend that you dehydrate them a little bit before you cook them, just because it'll sort of par cook them a little bit. So there's a bunch of different things you can do. But then you, of course, usually I'll double stack them. So I'll often do one with onion, one without. The one without, I'll stick cheese on it, stack them together. Then you can put the bun on top and then put like a lid or something over it to sort of let it all kind of steam. So you get the bun to heat up a little bit, you get the cheese super melty. And then, you just stack them up, throw a little bit of mayo, ketchup, mustard on it. So there's a good all-purpose burger sauce. It's basically roughly equal parts mayo, ketchup, and yellow mustard. And then you throw some either diced onions or diced pickles through it, just kind of mix it up. And that's kind of a really good just generic burger sauce, and also really good for dipping fries into.
You know, we really need to stop having this podcast getting recorded right before lunch.
Right at lunch.
Yeah, I'm like, really hungry. My stomach's like actively gurgling right now. So I think we might need to wrap this up pretty soon so I can get going on that.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, I was going to just say the only other food thing I was going to say is that I recently got a few new cookbooks that are focused on running. Nutrition around running, which there's some really fun recipes in there, but one of them I just did it the other night. It's a white fish, whatever white fish you want. We use tilapia, but you can use cod. There I think was halibut in there, and then might have even been a trout that you could have all the choices there, but you put out chopped green beans, cherry tomatoes, and capers on the bottom with a little bit of thyme and olive oil, lots of olive oil. And then you put down the white fish on top of that bed. And then you put sliced lemon on top with some more olive oil and salt and pepper. And then you just put that in the oven and bake it. And it was delicious.
Do you wrap it in foil or paper, or you just do it bare?
No, you just cook it. And apparently with the juice from the tomatoes, so the little tomatoes, I think we used flavor bombs. Because I didn't really go to any kind of farmer's market for this, but like all the juice and liquid from all of that, plus all of the olive oil and then the lemon on top, the lemon kind of soaks into the olive oil and then it soaks into the fish. So Tasted really good.
There's a French technique, fish en papillote, which is basically when you do exactly what you said, but you wrap it in a little parchment paper parcel. And that way it like really steams inside
that.
Maybe
you should try that next time. Yeah, so like you just wrap just the fish.
No, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you put paper down or foil down. I don't think it makes that much difference. You put like your beans, you put some like aromatics and stuff on the bottom. You put the fish on top, and then you can put lemon on top, or just you can even have the lemon on the bottom. It doesn't matter too much. Fresh herbs, like anything that's good from an aromatic perspective. So ginger, garlic. You wrap it pretty tight and you stick that in the oven for like 10, 15 minutes, depending on the size of the fish. And then you can actually serve it individual portions in the paper. And so at the table, each person unwraps their own piece of fish and, you know, you get this like burst of aromatic steam comes out when you first open it and everything.
Yeah, and, it's very fancy fish and chips.
We taste with our noses, right? So that burst of like aromatic flavors when you first open it, it's pretty nice on the table.
Yeah, I was just thinking about how easy it was to make and how nicely it presents in, you know, your standard white Corningware, the classic French white Corningware dish that I happen to have that I use. I was like, this actually looks really nice. The next time my in-laws come over, I now know I have a very simple meal to make that tastes good and has everything. Yeah. So
And that's a cool thing with doing it in the paper. You can do like
I'll have to try that.
Use cooking twine and do like a little like bow on the top and stuff. So it's literally like unwrapping a present.
I will have to do that just to like make it all fancy. And obviously it'll taste a lot better too when you get that nice fresh smell, but still. Anyway, y'all, so I think we have to go eat and go do things. And I think there's probably Matt has to go deal with babies.
And enjoy this lake time.
Yeah, go actually enjoy that. I'm going to literally pack up and drive off into the mountains. So
good. You all take care of yourselves. And it's good to hear your voices.
Yeah.
Bye. Toodles. Take care.
Toodles. Bye.